The ATL Files, the ultimate Falcons podcast.
Welcome aboard. I'm your host, Sean Drotar, and with week four in the books, it's time to take a spin around the NFL and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his special insights regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. And today in this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the Monday morning quarterback himself, Peter King, will join us. But as always, we start with the big interview. So let's get to it.
The big interview.
Joining us today to talk about the Falcons is the sports director of WSB Television. That's ABC2 for those of you in Atlanta. Zach Klein, how are you doing today, Zach?
Sean, doing great, man. It's finally nice to follow a first-place Falcons team. It's been a great treat these last 3 weeks. So life is good, man, and enjoying what they've been bringing to the table the last near month.
And not only a first-place team, but a first-place team with a two-game lead over everybody, because the rest of the division is 1-3, including the Carolina Panthers, after the Falcons got this done. They're putting up an almost 40-point-a-game clip. I don't know if that's sustainable, but what they're doing is extremely impressive. Now it seems to me, when I'm watching the Falcons games, obviously Matt Ryan is dealing. Julio Jones looks amazing. We were expecting some of that. But some of the challenges, and even though this game wasn't all that strong for them in it, the challenges in getting the Atlanta running game over the last couple years, trying to figure out, is there going to be a bell cow back? How do you handle the committee? It seems like they finally have a handle on this with Devonta Freeman and with Tevin Coleman, both in the rushing and receiving side. It seems as now the Falcons offense feels complete.
Without question, especially in the second year of Kyle Shanahan's system, Kyle and Matt are on the same page. And it stems from up front. And when I talk up front, Sean, I'm not talking about Matt Ryan. I'm talking about Alex Mack. He was their key free agent acquisition over the summer. And he takes out the call plane up front away from Matt, so Matt can just focus on what he sees in front of him and not worry about the defense coming at him in terms of the line protection. He's having time to throw. Last year, Sean, I might have gone one Mississippi, two, and then he was getting crushed. And all these running backs, as you mentioned, Devontae and Tevin, all they need is about a foot space to get through that. They're so quick out of the backfield. They do a great job receiving. You know, 2 weeks ago on Monday night, you know, Matt Ryan didn't even look Julio Jones' way for three quarters. He didn't have a catch, and the Falcons had 35 points against the Saints. Then you fast forward to this past Sunday against the Carolina Panthers, you know, 300 yards and a touchdown. So they're doing it with many weapons. I think he's gone eight different receivers, nine different receivers, eight different receivers, seven different receivers in these four consecutive weeks. So he's sharing the ball. He's getting his playmakers involved when they're open. And he's really, you know, taking advantage of what the defense is going at him, whether it's one-on-one coverage like we saw last week with Carolina, or multiple guys going against Julio and then just giving the rock to Devontae and Tevin.
When you look at that receiving core, and you're right, they're spreading it all over the place. I've noticed, too, that adding Mohamed Sanu, adding Jacob Tammy, this seems to be some of the complements that they were maybe missing last year. And that doesn't include some of the other youthful players that are making a difference for them as well. Now it seems like Ryan has a lot of different targets. He doesn't have to go to Jones, but Jones is so outstanding as a receiver that he's always going to get his chances. Doing that against the Saints was one thing. Doing that against the Panthers, that's entirely another. This was an impressive offensive performance.
Yeah, it was all around, Sean. I mean, when you have a history at your fingertips, becoming the first quarterback and wide receiver combination to go over 500 and 300 yards respectively, you know you're doing things right. And they were. They were clicking, and I don't know what Carolina was thinking by going one-on-one with Julio, but Matt just kept going to him and going to him, and you got to give Kyle credit for recognizing that and not getting stubborn. You know, Kyle last year, Sean, would hear criticism from the fans and the media that Roddy White wasn't getting involved. Roddy White wasn't getting involved. So what does he do? The next game out, he makes a point to stick it to all the fans and all the media members by calling three consecutive plays to Roddy White. So he was letting his personal ego get involved. Now he's put that to the side. He and Matt are definitely on the same page. And we've seen that, as you mentioned, almost 40 points per game, the number one passing offense, the number one scoring offense, and they're doing it both ways with a running attack 1 week like we saw in New Orleans, and then going through the air vertically this past Sunday at home against the Panthers.
Well, it doesn't get a lot easier with the defenses because now they travel to Denver to get the Broncos, one of the last three unbeaten teams in the league, and one that, well, let's say they're somewhat renowned for their defense too. Do the Falcons feel that now they have everything clicking enough that they can just go toe-to-toe and throw haymakers back and forth with the Broncos D, or do they expect to try to do something a little different?
They want to be fast and physical. That's what Dan Quinn preaches from day one. So they're going to try to establish the line of scrimmage. It will be interesting to see, Sean, how much action Tevin Coleman gets. He has a sickle cell trait in his system, in his body, that is, comes to fruition when you're under physical stress and high altitude situations. So I don't know if they're playing it really close to the vest and going to limit his snaps. But he says he will be available, but that will be something to watch, how much action Tevin Coleman will see on Sunday. They're going to try to get that ground game going, use the play action, and then go vertical with Sanu and Julio, get Jacob Tammy, Austin Hooper, the tight ends involved. But this is a different defense, Sean, let's be real, from what they faced in this three-game winning streak at Oakland, at New Orleans, and against Carolina. Arguably two of the worst defenses in the league the last 2 weeks. And Oakland was a very respectable performance out there. But I think it could be a very big wake-up call for them. I expect them to score, but not 35-plus points a game like we've seen during this run.
Yeah, for disclosure, people who aren't where I'm recording this, actually in Denver, which is where I am, and I remember watching Ryan Clark of the Pittsburgh Steelers had the same sickle cell challenge, and it turns out that his was so severe that he really couldn't play in Denver. It sounds like Coleman will be able to be available in some capacity, and that's, of course, great news for the Falcons and great news for the fans who are showing up to watch the game because he is entertaining. But we talk about that matchup, and really, I think if they can run, that's going to change things. But let's face it, this is going to be Julio Jones versus Aqib Talib. This is where the Broncos love to put Talib on these guys. He's a physical cornerback. He loves to try to get into guys' heads, and he likes to bait quarterbacks. When the Broncos beat the Buccaneers this last weekend, Aqib Talib had two interceptions off of Jameis Winston. Both times, Talib basically baited Winston into throwing over there, thinking it was open. Both times, Talib came away with it. Both times the Broncos took that short field and turned it into touchdowns. Denver does not have the offense that the Atlanta Falcons do, but you slip up and they will certainly get the job done on a short field.
Yes, and also, but keep in mind, Sean, that the Falcons definitely do not have the defense that your boys in Denver do. I mean, their defense ranks near the bottom in the NFL, a 30th coming into this week out of the 32 teams. They have zero defensive pressure. They are seeing some glimmers of hope with Dwight Freeney. He has had back-to-back sacks in consecutive weeks, getting Drew Brees 2 weeks ago and getting Cam Newton with a double spin move this past Sunday. So he's been a little bit of presence of surprise, but they are really hurting at the linebacker position. Sean Weatherspoon ruptured his Achilles tendon in Sunday's game. They're without Paul Warlow, who had groin surgery. Deion Jones, Devondre Campbell, another two linebacking core, also injured. They're questionable for this coming weekend. And then on Tuesday of this week, they signed former 10-year pro, rather, A.J. Hawk, former Green Bay Packer and Cincinnati Bengal linebacker, to a one-year deal. So the Falcons, that's how thin they are at the linebacking position, needing a guy off the streets to come in with just a few days to prepare to get ready to go on the road for back-to-back games in Denver this weekend and then the following Sunday in Seattle. So you mentioned the Falcons' offense. Yes, they have the advantage, but it's not even close when comparing the two Ds.
It is going to be a very different game potentially for both teams. Denver really hasn't faced an offense yet that can put up the numbers that Atlanta has. They thought originally when they saw the Colts in the second game of the year that that might be a team that's explosive, but we found out the Colts are really not as far along as anyone expected. So this is the sort of irresistible force, immovable object type matchups that people really enjoy watching in the NFL. But I guess I look at it, and sticking with this Denver game, it fascinates me because a couple years ago we watched a Denver Broncos offense with under Peyton Manning and his sort of last year he was wildly effective as a thrower, put up numbers that no one had ever seen before, records that may indeed be challenged by the Falcons, but it was an explosive offense, the most dynamic passing offense in history. They got to the Super Bowl with it, And then they got obliterated by the Seattle Seahawks. If you're the Falcons, is this the same kind of concern? I mean, you're going to ride this offense as far as you can. This is what they're going to do, and this is what they're built to do. But somewhere along the line, if you want to be a top contender, you can kind of learn from Denver's mistakes. There has to be a way where you can generate at least a stop here and there when you need it. How do the Falcons do that given their injury situation?
Well, they can't, and that's the problem. I mean, you're averaging almost 40 points per game, 354 passing yards, 125 yards on the ground, where nobody else is even close to 400 yards averaging. They're almost at 500 a game. So yeah, the offense is there, Sean, but that's the problem, right? Defense wins championships. You mentioned what happened to you, and look what happened. You guys flipped the what was working, and you focus on the other side of the ball, and you have a Super Bowl ring to show to the world. It's only going to last so much, right? Over the course of 16, 17 weeks, these guys are going to get battered and bruised. They're going to lose a step. They're just not going to be what they're doing right now. And in that Saints game, Sean, New Orleans, they were going back and forth, we thought whoever win that game, Sean, would be the last team with the ball. And Falcons made a stop. Drew Brees threw a pick six. And next thing you know, the Falcons took a one touchdown lead to a two touchdown lead, thanks to help from a bad decision from Drew Brees. Last week, Matt Ryan made a poor decision that made things close as the Carolina defense had a pick six. The Falcons have no defensive pressure. They have no defensive linebacking core. Desmond Trufant and Robert Alford are a pair of good corners that are very inconsistent this year. Keanu Neal is a rookie safety, their first-round draft choice, who missed the first two games of the regular season because he had knee surgery. So this will just be his third career game. So a lot of inexperience, a lot of guys that are just, battered and injured. I don't see – that's not the recipe for success right now. I think it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. You're beating up a lot of bad defenses, and what you're – so I give them credit for doing that. That's what you should be doing. But, at the end of the year, you are what you are, and I think they're just an 8-win team. Give them credit for what they're doing right now, man, but I think over the course of these next 2-3 months, defense will just not be able to stop anybody, and that record evens out.
On the bright side, they've bought themselves a little bit of room to maneuver, though. This division seems to be available. Every other team in there, Tampa, Carolina, New Orleans, 1-3. We know about the flaws, quite frankly, in each of these teams. They've already beaten New Orleans, Carolina. Yep. So they're in a pretty good position here. It might be one of those years where, quite frankly, if they drop to 8-8, that might even be enough to win this division. So this is a pretty exciting time. Carolina, of course, running into some troubles. They're not the same defensively without Josh Norman. And, of course, the Falcons ended up knocking him out of the game. Derek Anderson had to finish and put up some decent numbers during garbage time. But for the Falcons now, they are maybe being able to flip everything and realize, hey, 8-8, maybe we're flawed. That might be enough to win the division. You saw what Washington did last year, and yeah, they didn't get to go anywhere, but that's a team that nobody thought about making the playoffs. Atlanta seems to be putting a better foot forward than Washington did, certainly this early. So there's still a lot of reasons to be optimistic and a lot of reasons to be excited about this Falcons team. And maybe the biggest thing of all, people were having big-time questions about Matt Ryan's long-term viability. Are they having those anymore?
No, I think that was just unfair. I think, I don't care if you're Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers. If you do not have time to throw, you will not be successful. That's how simple it was. I mean, Matt had no time to throw last year. The offensive line was it was the worst in football, and it showed. Matt Ryan, it didn't produce. This year, with the addition of Alex Mack, we've seen a lot of two tight end sets that are providing an additional time for him to throw, and he's taking full advantage of that. So, I think the division is there. We're a quarter way into the season. They already have a two-game lead on everybody. And just a few years ago, they had a chance to get in to the playoffs with 7 wins. So I think if they win these rest of the game, these games, which I think they will in the division, you're at that 7-9 win towards the end of the year. And I think that's enough to get them into the playoffs. And then who knows, man? Can Matt and Julio get hot and have one of these games? Probably, possibly. But in the end, defense wins championships. That's what we saw with Denver. And I think that's what will prevent them from taking that next step. Would I want to play them? No, because on any given Sunday, we can see what happened last week where you're throwing for 503 yards and one receiver's getting 300. The offense, not worried about, Sean. The defense, just way too many holes to be competitive down the stretch.
That is Zach Klein. The Twitter handle is at Zach Klein WSB. I'll spell that one out for you. That's Z-A-C-H-K-L-E-I-N WSB. The WSB stands for WSTV ABC2 in Atlanta locally, where Zach is the sports director. Zach Klein, thank you so much for your time and so much for your insight, because this is a fun time, and who knows how long it'll last, but it's a fun time to be a Falcons fan, because that is entertaining television.
Sean, it's your world, man. I'm just living in it. Looking forward to the game on Sunday between the Falcons and the Broncos.
Thank you so much. Take care, Zach. Make sure you follow Zach again at Zach Klein, WSB in Atlanta. And on the other side, we will have the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
And now it's time for the coach, Brian Billick, who's brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time with SeatGeek. Coach, when you use SeatGeek, what makes that so great?
Well, there's got too many things to cover in just one show. I mean, the great thing is the how broad-based in terms of the different ticket agencies that it brings together for you. You're going to get the best choice. You're going to see exactly where the seats are. You're going to get a rating on how good a deal this is. And most importantly, every transaction is guaranteed by SeatGeek.
Well, I know I use it. And if you use it as well, you can now today use the promo code Billick, and then you'll get $20 back on your first purchase with the SeatGeek app. So do what I do. Do what the coach does. Use SeatGeek. Make sure you get your family the best seats for concerts, sports, and everything else that you can go enjoy. Coach, this is another fascinating week in the NFL, as it always is. But I'll start with the most recent game, the Monday night game last night. We watched the Minnesota Vikings leap to still continue their run. They're now 4-0. There have been essentially a surprise for everybody, in as much as the pieces seem to keep falling off the car here and there, but the car keeps going at full speed. You know, what kind of job are they getting done up there in Minnesota? It's extremely impressive.
Yeah, it's spectacular, and it's because you can base it on defense. This is, for my money, maybe the best defense in the National Football League. They're built right, a dominant front seven, a secondary that doesn't give up big plays. That was the thing last night that jumped out at you, and you knew it was going to be a problem for the New York Giants. They had one big play, the big 67-yarder that they were able to hit, and that was it. You have to try to generate some big plays particularly when you're going to go on the road. And then Minnesota, although not overwhelmingly on offense, but were able to, you know, kind of keep the drives alive. They were 8 of 16 on third down, so they kind of kept the drives alive. They did not turn the ball over. Sam Bradford was excellent that way. And they got just enough out of the running game, which they stuck with 30-plus carries for over 100 yards, that the Giants just couldn't combat that on the road. That's going to be the formula that Minnesota will win with all year long.
Looking over at the NFC East now that the Giants lost that game, they are at 2-2. They started out well, and I think people thought that maybe this was going to all fit for them going over the season. Now they've lost to everybody else in the divisions on a winning streak. Philly, of course, still leads now with the bye week. They're still unbeaten at 3-0. But there isn't a team with a losing record. Now we're only four games in. But have we underestimated the NFC East, or has this been something of a beneficiary of the schedule?
Yeah, to a degree. We'll see when they start really taking each other on. We're going to find out about Philadelphia Eagles, who right now look pretty darn good. I mean, when you look at what happened over the weekend, how impressive is Pittsburgh and what they did to Kansas City? Well, what does that tell us about Philadelphia, who beat them last week and held them to 3 points? How good are, by way of example as well, the Oakland Raiders, who we were kind of dismissive of the fact because they lost at home to Atlanta. They go on the road and beat an undefeated Baltimore team. How good does that tell us Atlanta is? So, you know, you can draw some comparisons. Philadelphia's for real. We're going to find out going forward just how much for real. And the Dallas Cowboys, again, the schedule has not been that taxing for them. But by the same token, you know, they've looked pretty darn good with a rookie quarterback and a rookie running back that they lead the league in third down conversions, and they've got the top runner in the National Football League. So, yeah, particularly with New York and Dallas, these teams are for real. Washington still seems to be trying to get its footing. Don't know about them, and we'll see. You know, obviously they have a chance to continue to get better as we move along here. But the division looks very, very good. But I don't know that there's any dominating teams in it. Outside, we'll see how good Philly is. But I don't know that there is any dominating team or division in the NFC right now.
Let's take a look over at those Steelers in the AFC. Now they got Le'Veon Bell back, and you could see what a difference that makes. Pittsburgh's offense essentially just rolled, and this is something that they could do. You saw Le'Veon Bell line up even as a wide receiver for more than a few snaps to make sure that they mixed things up and were able to still use D'Angelo Williams, give the Chiefs a lot of different looks. When you look at the AFC now with Pittsburgh kind of being all together again, Pittsburgh, New England, Houston, all leading their divisions at 3-1, Denver at 4-0. Which of these are contenders, and which of these maybe still have a little bit of work to do to get that way?
Well, I think they're all contenders. Denver playing great defense and running the ball, and notwithstanding the quarterback position, but they both, Paxton Lynch looked very calm when he went in. Trevor Siemian obviously has played very solid. The Pittsburgh Steelers still remain to me, you know, this could be a truly dominant team. But here they're a week removed from losing 34-3 to the Philadelphia Eagles. So we still have some sorting out to do. We're only at the quarter mark. We'll know more at the halfway mark, obviously. And for the Steelers coming up, this week they're going to play the Jets. How real are the Jets? Another team that a couple weeks ago, me included, were saying, wow, this team is a Super Bowl caliber team. Now they can't even get out of their way, having 9 turnovers, 9 interceptions in the last 2 games. But we're going to find out about the Steelers because they're going to play the Jets. They have to go to Miami, and it's always tough going down into Miami to play. And then they're going to play the New England Patriots and the Baltimore Ravens. So we're going to know by the midway point just how real and consistent the Pittsburgh Steelers are. Was that 34-3 beatdown by the Philadelphia Eagles the proverbial wake-up call, or was it an indicator that maybe there are still some chinks in the armor?
Well, one of the teams that you mentioned also earlier that surprised, I think, a lot of folks, the Atlanta Falcons are 3-1. There is an impression that maybe they're doing it with smoke and mirrors to an extent. They lost that opening game to Tampa Bay when Jameis Winston just looked electric, and he hasn't looked the same since. But they're averaging almost 40 points a game. That's probably not sustainable. But given the shootouts they've been in, you wonder if that's almost what they're going to have to do to keep winning. So if you're the Atlanta Falcons, what do you do to keep everything rolling, knowing that you probably can't, barring something very strange, keep putting up 40 a game?
Yeah, well, the most impressive thing to me is the fact that the wins they've gotten on the road at Oakland and New Orleans. I know New Orleans isn't a great team, but still a tough place to play. And then a very physical Carolina Panther team. And to win where they did with Matt Ryan having a record year, he's on pace to just blow away. 2012 was his best year. We had, 4,700 yards, and I think it was 36 touchdowns, something like that. He's on pace to just blow that away. You're right. It's unrealistic to think they're going to stay at this pace. But with Devontae Freeman in the backfield, with Mohamed Sanu opposite the receiver, they're, and the offensive line playing very well, this is a very legitimate offensive group. Now, defensively, they may have to score 40 points a game because defensively I think they still may struggle a little bit. Remember now, they did give up 33 points to Carolina and 32 points to New Orleans. That's Drew Brees and Cam Newton. I get that. But they also gave up 28 points to the Oakland Raiders and 31 points to Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think they're still struggling defense. The key is, can they increase their pass rush ability a little bit, get a little bit better that way? But I think this is a team that certainly can be a factor.
The Patriots have Tom Brady back in action this week. They play the Browns, who are winless. This doesn't look like a real good matchup for the Browns, but it looks like a great place for Tom Brady to kickstart his 2016 campaign. Do you expect any sort of growing pains or any sort of wobbliness coming back, or is Brady and Belichick, is this a well-oiled enough machine that it's going to look like he never left?
Oh, no, yeah, more of the latter, although there may be some hiccups on the way. I look at this like a Broadway play. What do? You take it out of town to get it up to snuff, and you bring it back to town into New York. Well, this is their off-Broadway, out-of-town debut, good place to go, play a Cleveland team. I don't know. I mean, the football gods just, I don't know what they have against the Cleveland Browns. The tight losses they've had, and now they've got to take on the New England Patriots. Oh, by the way, Tom Brady coming back. Tough combination. Obviously a good team for New England to open with on the road, kind of, get the, dust off the rust, so to speak. And I imagine it'll be a game plan that's heavy. Cleveland's near last in the league, or one of the worst teams in the league against the run, so I imagine we're going to see a lot of LeGarrette Blount, let Tom Brady get his feet underneath him. And so that when they come back, we'll see exactly after. Because, they got some interesting games after this, and they're obviously poised for it. Most, not the least of which, they're going to play the Cincinnati Bengals. They got to play the Pittsburgh Steelers at Pittsburgh. and then they get to go back at those Buffalo Bills who they just lost to. So they're gonna be challenged coming up, but I'm sure they're excited about it.
Well, we've been talking about the good thing teams have been doing, and there's a lot of those stories around the league, but one of the ones that stands out is a team that's not getting it done, and that is the Arizona Cardinals, now 1-3. Carson Palmer in the concussion protocol. They have a Thursday night football game coming up. On the surface, it doesn't look like there's that much wrong with the Cardinals, but something is obviously off kilter, Coach. What are you seeing?
Well, they're a little like the Carolina Panthers. I was talking all day yesterday on my shows for the NFL Network. People say, okay, what's wrong with the Carolina Panthers? And when you look at them, they're not far off. I mean, they're not running the ball quite as well as last year. They're not quite as good on third down. They're not quite as explosive. Defensively, they're not quite as dynamic. They're good, but not quite what we saw last year. And you add all those up, and all of a sudden now, that means some losses. The Arizona Cardinals appear the same way. They just don't seem to be as good as they were last year. Still solid, but not good enough, obviously, to get a win. And now they've played a couple good teams here. The New England Patriots, obviously, Buffalo in a little bit of a role. The Rams, it's always a tough defensive struggle with the Rams. I'm not quite sure what's going to have to happen. The offensive line's going to have to step up. They're going to have to start getting down the field a little bit more with that gifted receiving core they have. And that front seven in particular, the defense needs to start showing up and doing the things that it did last year in terms of putting pressure on the quarterback and stuffing the running game.
He is the coach, Brian Billick, and you can use that same last name, Billick, on the SeatGeek app right now and get $20 back on your first purchase with the SeatGeek app. Coach, thank you so much for the insight. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Coming up next, we'll go into overtime with Peter King.
Overtime.
This week, we're delighted to be joined by Peter King, editor-in-chief of MMQB.com. That's Monday Morning Quarterback, the site that's become synonymous with the best and deepest NFL coverage anywhere. Peter's brought to us by SeatGeek, because it's football season. The NFL and college football are in full swing. Baseball's playoffs are upon us, so be sure to visit SeatGeek.com and download the SeatGeek app for all the best ticket deals. Remember, the NHL and NBA seasons are on the horizon, too, so make sure you and your family are getting the best deals for the most exciting sporting events every time with SeatGeek. How are you doing today, Peter?
Everything's going great. Thank you for hosting me today. This is going to be fun.
Our pleasure. Well, I'll go with a couple quick ones for you. We'll start right here. Odell Beckham Jr. suggested that he's being targeted by officials after his three-catch, 23-yard performance on Monday Night Football. Do the Zebras really let defenders have their way with him more than any other receiver?
No, but that was a marginal call against the Minnesota Vikings that Xavier Rhodes could have been flagged for hitting Beckham out of bounds. But my feeling is that once you start to get this paranoia that the league is against you, that the officials are against you, I think Odell Beckham needs to understand that every official in this league is judged on every call he makes. And if he goes over the line on Odell Beckham Jr. to either call something against him or to do something out of the ordinary against one player, A, he's not going to get any playoff assignments. B, he's not going to be in the league for very long. So I think most of that is a figment of Odell Beckham's imagination.
Well, let's stick with wide receivers. Josh Gordon will stay on the reserve suspended list after saying he would enter rehab. And that seems like the right thing for him. I don't think there's any question about that. And while there's no need for the Browns to move on immediately, is this relationship irrevocably damaged?
I think the Browns, especially the current iteration of the front office and coaching staff, I had invested so much time and energy, and basically it's about the fourth major stumble that he's had, Josh Gordon has had. And my feeling is that at this point, especially when you're trying to build a program, you are getting ready to have him come onto your team after being let back in football by the NFL after his year-long suspension. And you have to ask yourself, why are we in this business? Are we in this business to try to get somebody off the substances that have bedeviled him for most of his adult life, or are we in here to win football games? Well, you know, I think most teams would say maybe one, two, or three strikes, okay, we can take it from a great player, but no matter how great he is, at some point, we got to pull the plug. In my opinion, the Browns have reached that point. I don't know if they are going to, you know, get rid of him after he finishes this rehab, but in my opinion, they should.
Coming off their shocking shutout win over the Patriots, the Bills coach Rex Ryan said that he was, quote, BSing about having sources that tipped him off about Jacoby Brissett starting at quarterback. Now, with Rex, you know there's a lot of gamesmanship. Is this just fun, or does this maybe start to undermine the trust between the Bills, Ryan, and the media that covers him?
I mean, anybody who I read his transcript from the press conference where he claimed to know what was going on with the Patriots. There's no way he was going to know what goes on with the Patriots. There's no way he's going to know who's going to start for the Patriots. He says that almost in a comedic way, and it's just part of his shtick. I mean, maybe it's because I've known Ryan for a long time, and I've listened to him for a long time, but he's one of those coaches that about 85% of what he says, I think, just goes in one ear and out the other because a lot of it is so silly. So I just don't think it matters. And I don't think that we ought to be taking seriously when he gets on the conference call and asks Julian Edelman, hey, Julian Waltatulski from the Buffalo News, are you playing quarterback this week? I mean, it's a shtick. It's fun. So I don't think it's to be taken very seriously.
Well, keeping in the taking maybe a little gamesmanship being taken seriously, Josh Norman really went after the Carolina Panthers after their loss this season, needling them, saying, quote, you get what you pay for. Now, obviously, they parted ways with him in the offseason in one of sort of the most bizarre and notable stories in the offseason. How badly did the Panthers realistically now regret that decision?
Well, I know Dave Gettleman quite well. He's general manager of the Panthers. And I can tell you pretty categorically that Dave Gettleman does not regret the decision. And in fact, you know, let's think about, I just looked this up yesterday. You know, let's think about the Carolina Panthers right now and what they've done so far this year. Their defense in the first three games of the year allowed 307, 302, and 211 net yards. And so that is not, it's not the defense's fault what's going on. Now, they got shredded by the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday. So everybody is going to say, clearly, their defense, the rush isn't there. They don't cover as well, blah, blah, blah. And in my opinion, I talked to Julio Jones after this game. I really think that a part of the problem was in the game plan, was in how they defended Julio Jones. Because in a lot of ways, they singled Julio Jones, his 77 or 75 yard touchdown, whatever it was. Ben Wickery didn't have any help until he was too far gone. So I just look at this and I say we can't really be prisoners of the moment. They had a really bad defensive game, but they just simply don't believe in paying a cornerback $15 million or $14 million, whatever it was. And so far, since Gettleman has gotten there, he's been proven right in his personnel acumen. We'll see how this pans out, but no, I don't think they're second-guessing themselves over it.
Last one, Peter. The first-round pick, Paxton Lynch, played well at quarterback in relief of the injured Trevor Siemian in Denver's easy win over Tampa. Broncos coach Gary Kubiak stated unequivocally that Siemian would remain the starter. Now, is that the right choice, or is it just the safe one?
It's the right choice. I think Gary Kubiak loved the intelligence and the decision-making of Trevor Siemian, and he's got better arm than people give him credit for. So I think that Trevor Siemian not only has done nothing to lose this job, but he's really, in the last, whatever, six quarters that he played, he was a huge factor in helping his team win. So I think this absolutely is the right decision. You don't make a replacement at a position on the field unless you are trying to make your team better. Benching a healthy enough Trevor Siemian would be making this team worse.
Brought to you by SeatGeek. He's the one and only Peter King. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at @SI_PeterKing and visit MMQB.com for the most insightful NFL coverage on a daily basis. Thanks for your time, Peter.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's the final gun, and it's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files. Check out all the podcasts for every team in the league because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at @SDrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R. We'll catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.